Good evening, everyone. You're in the right place at the right time. This is Coast to Coast AM, blasting out of the Mojave Desert like a Scirocco, blazing across the land, into your town, into your home, slamming into your radio like a supercharged nanoparticle of unobtainium. Greetings from the boldest, bawdiest, most outrageous city in the world, the planetary capital of sun, fun, sin, sex, and secrets, my not-so-humble hometown, Las Vegas, Nevada. My name is George Knapp, your occasional host, designated driver of the airwaves, and moderator of tonight's upcoming cacophony of conversation. Happy to be here on this Saturday night, though it's not normally the spot I fill. Looks like I might be hosting at least one Saturday per month in March and April as well, as the folks at Coast to Coast will be trying a rotating lineup of weekend hosts, which could be fun. Since, as listeners know, each host brings something different to the table. As you may have heard the other night from George Norrie, John Wells has departed. We'll no longer be hosting the program on weekends. We certainly wish John well, and I'm sure as many loyal listeners look forward to hearing him in whatever new ventures he pursues. We've got a power-packed program for you this evening. This is Super Bowl Eve, of course. It's almost like a national holiday, isn't it? It generates about as much revenue as a national holiday. Families come together, extended families, viewing parties, big meals, tribal gatherings almost, with chants and incantations and rituals all their own. You know, one of the things that's made the Super Bowl and NFL football in particular so popular is gambling. Now, the NFL doesn't like to admit it. They don't even want to talk about it. They pretend it's not true. But they conveniently publish weekly player injury updates that are of use to almost no one except gamblers. And they're right there carried in the newspaper right alongside the daily point spread. Here in Las Vegas, you'd have a hard time getting a hotel room this weekend. The game might be in New York, but the action is here. $100 million will be wagered on this one game in this one town with all these manner of weird proposition bets, not just which team's going to win or what's the point total going to be, but weird stuff. Who's going to kick the first field goal? Will Peyton Manning's first pass be a completion or incompletion? Stuff like that. The total that will be wagered on this game illegally is many times the amount that will be wagered in the legal sports books here in Nevada. $100 million is nothing compared to what will be bet in office pools or maybe a friendly wager with the neighborhood bookie. Where does all that money go? And could it influence the game itself? Now, it might be a sacrilege for some to even suggest. Sports fans might hate it, but with so much money at stake, isn't it at least worth pondering that maybe games can be fixed, that players or officials can be bought, that point spreads get shaved or influenced, that the outcome is influenced by money or drugs or sex or good old-fashioned threats, broken kneecaps, a gun to the head of a loved one? With $100 million or more at stake, could it happen? You better believe it could happen. In this first hour tonight, we'll explore this idea with perhaps the most preeminent proponent of the idea that sporting events are fixed, Brian Toohey. For those of you who might be groaning about us covering a sports topic, it is sports, that's true, but that is not our focus at all. We're talking about the behind-the-scenes manipulation of our lives, the hidden forces that pull the strings to our detriment. And for their benefit, if Brian Toohey is right, this is a massive conspiracy. It's an ongoing conspiracy, and it gets brushed under the rug by people who should be taking a hard look at it. That's almost a textbook definition of what we do here at Coast. We peek our heads under the circus tent and take a look around at things we're not supposed to see or not supposed to know. That's coming up in just a few minutes. At a minimum, you should probably hear some of this information before you plunk down your money with a bookie tomorrow. And then in hour two, a mind-blowing topic. Now, I'm going to admit to you, I wasn't too sure about this topic when I was told about the lineup. Here's the guests, here's the book, and I'm asking myself, what the heck is viral mythology? Sounds stuffy, academic. And then I read the book, got it last night, read it today, realized that the concepts explored in this book affect everything we know, everything we do. We know this stuff so well that we don't even think about it anymore. On one level, the book and our conversation tonight is about how information is shared. starting with how ancient peoples shared stuff with other people, before the internet or radio or the printing press or even before language itself. What started with sort of storytelling around the campfire and became poems, songwriting, cave drawings, petroglyphs, hieroglyphs, and then written words, books, libraries. It gave us legends, myths, tall tales, and stories. The authors who will be here tonight look at the ways in which information has been shared and how that may have changed not only society, but changed us, affected our evolution as a species and as a culture. We'll take it from those early cave drawings all the way to viral videos and internet memes and how information is shared today, how we're manipulated by it. The stories about ancient aliens, for example, the Da Vinci Code, secret societies, the Illuminati, the Nazca lines, mysteries like that, the kind of stuff that we talk about on Coast all the time. We're going to cover it tonight with two really smart people, both PhDs, Marie Jones and Larry Flaxman, who've written this wonderful book, Viral Mythology, and I'm very confident that you're going to enjoy this. A couple of quick news items before we move into the interviews. Indonesia rocked by a volcano today. CNN reporting tonight that Mount Sinabung erupted several times today, spewing a plume of ash and smoke more than a mile into the sky. 15 people known dead. The total could go higher, of course. The clouds are so hot, I guess rescuers and planes and helicopters having trouble getting near the area. Oscar-winning actor Maximilian Schell has died in Austria after a long illness. Schell won his Oscar for the powerful film Judgment at Nuremberg. Haven't seen that in a while. You might want to check it out. It's a wonderful film. He was 83 years old. Webmaster Sean and I have put together an assortment of news items and articles culled from various sources over the past week or so, stories that caught my attention for one reason or another. Americans who are concerned about massive surveillance by the NSA and those other three-letter agencies have some company. One story we put on the Coast website is about how Canadian spy agencies are now tracking the movements of Canadian citizens, most of whom are not suspected of anything, of course. So to our friends in the Great White North, I say welcome to the club. That story is posted on the Coast website under Naps News, if you care to check it out. It may not be there yet, but it will be soon. Also there under Naps News, a report on the mysterious space plane, the Air Force X-37B, which passed a milestone a couple of days ago. But, you know, it's not exactly like anyone's throwing a party or blowing out candles on a cake, though. The Air Force won't talk about the X-37B, won't say what its mission is, won't say what it's doing up there, won't answer any questions at all. But we know it's now been in orbit for 400 straight days, so congratulations, I think. One other article of note might be related to the X-37B. I'm not sure. It's a paper from a frequent Coast guest, Joseph Farrell. Remember him? He's written about anti-gravity research. It's not just for sci-fi movies anymore. Farrell traces the roots of anti-grav research underway at places like Boeing and other companies. Pretty cool article. No idea if that X-37B is using anything like that because, as I mentioned, the Air Force won't tell us anything about it. We have a few other items and articles under Naps News and can chat about them later if time allows. Now time to move forward, take our first break, then we're back to talk about a massive alleged conspiracy, fixed sports events. Say it ain't so. I'm George Knapp, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast. I'm George Knapp, and I'm joined now by Brian Toohey, who is one of the leading experts in the country in the revealing what we should all know about fixed sporting events. He's written a book called The Fix Is In back in 2010, The Showbiz Manipulations of the NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, Hockey, NASCAR, which gained international attention. Wall Street Journal and a whole bunch of other media outlets took note. Brian has written a new book called Larceny Games, picking up where that one left off, and has explored, has somehow got a hold of a whole treasure trove of FBI documents that really blow the lid off this stuff. Brian, great to have you back on the program.
Hey, thanks for having me on, George. I appreciate it.
Well, here we are on the eve of the Super Bowl, and just to sort of set the stage, I had told our audience in the first segment, sort of introducing this topic, that it's not just for sports fans. It's not just about sporting events, that this is more than a sports story. It's a conspiracy, and it's a big one. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, I think you got that right, is the fact that I think sporting events are fixed on two different levels. and not everybody believes one of the levels. One of the levels, I believe, is that the leagues will manipulate the outcome of their own games sometimes to garner better TV ratings, more fan interest, and thus more revenue for them. On another level, and what Larceny Games talks about, is the fact that organized crime and gamblers have gotten to athletes, have gotten to referees, and got them to fix games and shave points in professional and college sports as well. And that's something that the professional leagues won't admit to, despite the fact that the evidence I found from the FBI through the Freedom of Information Act would say that the leagues are not telling us the whole truth when it comes to gambling on their sports.
We'll talk about football a little bit in the beginning here, but broaden it out a bit more later. And of course, the obvious reason we talk about football is because of the Super Bowl coming tomorrow. As I mentioned, you know, in the introductory remarks, the NFL is ridiculous. It's so hypocritical in how it treats the topic of gambling. They won't allow, for example, they won't allow an exhibition game in Las Vegas because we've got gambling here. It's the only legal gambling in the country on sports, they pretend that the point spread doesn't exist and do everything they can to encourage it because they know darn good and well that gambling is why the NFL is so popular, right?
Oh, exactly. I mean, that's why they purport and promote fantasy football. And the same with fantasy basketball and fantasy baseball is because they know that fans are interested then in more games and more outcomes and are also wagering money on those events because of their own fantasy sports teams. But you're right, the hypocrisy is the really strong thing that bothers me and bothers a lot of other people as well, because they know that literally hundreds of billions of dollars are being wagered on these sporting events every year. I mean, the last good estimate we have comes from 1999, that says anywhere from $80 billion to $380 billion is wagered each year illegally on sports in the United States alone. And yet when we look outside the United States, when we look at Europe and elsewhere where sports gambling is legal, what happens is that legalization, like it does in Las Vegas where you are, it provides a form of oversight on these leagues. And I think that's the big thing leagues are afraid of, is that they're afraid of some sort of outside oversight. They'll be looking at their games in a different fashion. And that can lead to investigations, it can lead to arrests, and it can lead to convictions like it has in Europe for fixing games.
Well, I can tell you for a fact that Las Vegas, the lines are posted here. Everybody can see them. And when there's something funny, you can sometimes spot it. You know, that there have been several cases here where a line moves or doesn't move, and it tips off seasoned gamblers who then ask law enforcement about it, and they find out when somebody is doing something hinky.
Well, exactly, and they caught the big ASU scandal for fixing in college basketball about 10, 15 years ago because of Las Vegas, because the kids who were involved went to Vegas and bet there. And I've talked to guys who work in Vegas, bookmakers and such, and they see it as be a fool to go to Las Vegas and bet on a fixed game because they would spot it. Well, that's what happens in Europe. But the fact is here in the United States for baseball, for football, and all the major sports that people bet on, is most of that money, 99% of the money bet on these games, is done through illegal channels, be it offshore sports books or their local bookie, what have you. All of that is mob controlled. It's all controlled by organized crime. In fact, the FBI says it's probably the number one moneymaker for the mob today. And so even when you bet $50 with your local bookie, the little fish in this pond kind of feed the middle fish who feed the bigger fish. And even though you bet $50 with a guy you know, chances are that's being funneled up the ladder to the big mobsters, and they're making bank on this sort of thing.
Well, let's talk about that. Who are the big mobsters? You look at organized crime, and you know, you'd like to think, or you know, one image of it coming from Hollywood is there's a Don Corleone guy with a bunch of other fellows in a darkened room plotting who's going to win tomorrow's Super Bowl. Now, it's not quite like that, right?
No, I don't believe it is. I mean, I believe that if gamblers or organized crime are going to fix a game, it's kind of a crime of opportunity. And what it's going to be is they're going to have an in with a player or with a coach or with a referee who most likely has a problem of their own, some sort of addiction, be it maybe drugs, be it gambling themselves, maybe they have women problems, maybe they have men problems. They have some way to get to a player or a referee and get them to do what they need to do. And it's usually kind of a one-time deal. And that's the problem with it, is because it can be just a one-time deal. It can be a one-off thing. It's not going to show up. It's going to be very, very hard to detect, and that's one of the things I discovered with these FBI files was the FBI would have extremely credible evidence about a gambler or organized crime working with someone within the sport, and they would know a result ahead of time, and the result would come out exactly the way the FBI thought it would be, but that didn't necessarily prove a crime had been committed. They needed a wiretap. They needed a confession to really get someone and arrest them, and they couldn't get those things. That's the tricky part with fixing games, is there's very little concrete evidence to go on to prove that something like this happened.
I got a friend of mine, I'll call him Kenny the Hawk, who has made a good living for 30 years, the 30 years that I've known him. He travels back and forth, California and Hawaii and Nevada, and he makes a good living by betting sports events that he thinks are rigged. And he looks for odd things in the point spread. He looks for where it appears that the bookies are sucking money onto one side from the public, and the line doesn't move. He looks for anomalies like that. It's an instinctive thing, I think, to a large degree, because it's unless you really are into this stuff, you wouldn't notice it. But like I said, he's made a pretty good living on just the premise that you're going on, that some events are rigged, and that it happens on a fairly frequent basis. Maybe not every day, maybe certainly not every game, but on a regular basis.
Well, I've heard the same thing from gamblers myself who've kind of sent me emails and said, look, I've kind of thought the same thing you have, and I, like you said, made a profit from doing it. The frightening part is the fact, like the NFL says, we've never had a game fixed ever in our entire history. It's never happened. Geez. Nobody's ever gotten to anyone. Well, the FBI files I found and dug up, and I was the first person to ever find these things and make them public, would say completely otherwise. And, you know, Major League Baseball says we haven't had a scandal since the 1919 Black Sox, you know, 100 years ago, basically. Well, the FBI files would counter that. The NBA says it hasn't happened since 1954. These files would counter that as well. I mean, the thing is the leagues can get away with saying this sort of thing doesn't happen because no one's ever been convicted of it. But yet when you look outside our borders, when you look at soccer, when you look at tennis, when you look at cricket, and you see people getting arrested and convicted literally almost every day now, that's how bad it's gotten around the world. To think that that sort of corruption has not touched our sports in the United States, I think is incredibly naive. And it's just because no one's looking for this thing.
Well, I mean, we're going to get into the FBI files. I mean, they do have jurisdiction, as you note in your book, but it would seem like they'd want to go after these guys. I mean, look what they have done to organized crime, or the mafia as we know it. They've decimated the mafia, and what little is left. They had another big bust a couple of weeks ago in New York City. What members of all five families are busted. I didn't even know there were still that many mobsters left, but they hauled them in and threw them in jail, and it just seems like there aren't enough big mafia dons left to control this sort of thing, or am I wrong?
Well, I don't know who's at the very top, and I don't think a lot of people, especially in the gambling world, really know who's the biggest fish in the pond, so to speak. But it hasn't gone away. Like I say, I mean, they estimate for the Super Bowl tomorrow there's going to be $10 billion wagered on that game worldwide. $10 billion, that's how much the NFL makes in a season. That's more than the NHL and NBA make combined in a season. Okay, that's a ton of money on a game. Now extrapolate that over the course of a season, and that's a lot of money being spread around, and somebody's making a profit off of it. And it's got to be, again, it's organized crime to a certain extent, because it's all illegal gambling here in the United States. That's the problem.
Well, of course, a lot of that is just, you know, I'm betting the guy in the office, or you got a pool going or something like that. The organized crime is not getting a piece of that. You're talking about the
really
illegal bookie stuff.
I'd say that's not really illegal gambling, though. That's actually legal gambling. You and I can make a bet right here on the air for a game, you know, for whatever, $50, and we're not breaking any law.
Who do you like?
The only time it becomes illegal, is when someone is taking, you know, their piece, so the vig, the juice, whatever you want to call it, like in Las Vegas when you have to bet $11 to win $10. If you do that, if you and I did that, then it would be illegal.
The idea that you expressed, and I guess it's in the, I don't know if it's in the first book or in the second book, but what you said a couple of minutes ago about it's estimated between $80 billion and $380 billion a year are wagered illegally, that's a pretty big spread right there. It suggests to me that really nobody knows.
Well, you're exactly right. Nobody does know. And again, that's what makes it sort of frightening, is because even if it's the $80 billion, if you look at it in terms of just sports, $80 billion is three times what all the major sports leagues make combined. And that's the bottom line. That's the bottom number. And if people think, well, you know, that's a lot of money, but so what? Well, if you think the NFL has control over their games and they're making $10 billion a year, if there's $80 billion being bet on that, on these games, why do you think that money has no influence and cannot influence these games that you watch? Why do you think they're pure when that much money is out there to be made by somebody who might be willing to break a law or two?
I want to find out from you how you got hooked on this topic. I'm curious whether you made a bet and it went south on you, and that kind of got you asking questions or what. And then I want to ask you about this game tomorrow, whether there's anything hinky or suspicious about the point spread and how you might be betting if you were a wagering guy still. We're talking with Brian Toohey about fixed sporting events and his new book. Stay with us, much more to come. We're talking with Brian Toohey about his new book about sports betting, whether or not it's fixed in this country. The book is called Larceny Games, and when we come back, we'll talk about this Super Bowl being played in New Jersey, not in New York City, but in New Jersey, whether or not there's anything hinky about the game tomorrow, how it looks, and a little bit about these FBI files that Brian obtained and what they reveal. Stay with us. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast. Brian Toohey's new book is called Larceny Games, based in large part on FBI files that he obtained, 400 or so files that no one had ever requested before. Brian, before we get into talking about those files, what about the Super Bowl? If you were a betting man, which way would you go? I mean, on one hand, you'd think with so many eyes on something like this, maybe it's under too much scrutiny to do anything hinky. On the other hand, wow, that's a lot of money, $10 billion bet on one sporting contest.
Well, I don't bet on the games. To try to maintain my kind of journalistic integrity here, when I'm talking to bookmakers and when I'm talking to professional sports gamblers, I don't want them to have any thought that I'm trying to, you know, get inside information out of them to bet on these games. So I avoid betting on them. But one thing I can tell listeners is, look, if you want to look at the Super Bowl, you can look at it two ways in terms of fixing it, potentially. The World Cup, which is the biggest sporting event in the world, it's the most watched sporting event in the world, it's the biggest one, it has been known and proven that games within the World Cup soccer tournament have indeed been fixed by gamblers and by organized crime. That has occurred. So if they can do that, they could get to this football game. And at the same time, if the NFL itself, if the league wanted to fix that game, if they wanted to just simply manipulate it so it stays close into the fourth quarter so people watch to the very end, like many people thought they did last year with a blackout, right, the NFL can do just that and do it legally. There's no law that prevents the league fixing its own game.
You know, my friend Kenny, who bets upon the premise that games are fixed, he would tell me, look, all it takes is one, maybe two holding penalties in an NFL game, and you change the whole flow of the game. And you can call a holding penalty pretty much in every play if you really wanted to. It's a judgment call. There's nothing anybody can do about it.
Well, exactly. And I think that's one thing people can watch for tomorrow is if you see, you know, the Seattle defensive backs, for example, really holding and clutching and grabbing and interfering with the Broncos wide receivers and no flags are being thrown. And they're just, as a lot of times the announcers like to say, they're just letting them play out there. Well, why is that? If the league has a rule book and there are certain, you know, regulations that say this is holding, this is pass interference, and the referees aren't calling those penalties, you have to question why. You know, why is that? And now, at the same time, on the flip side, if they're throwing flags all over the place against one team and not another team, again, why? Like you say, it's a judgment call, and they can make that whenever, wherever they want to, and it can alter the outcome of the game. I mean, last year, in the very last play of the San Francisco had the chance to win the game, there seemed to be a clear holding or at least pass interference call that should have been made that wasn't. The referees just let them play, and it really cost the 49ers their Super Bowl last year, and many people just went, ah, so well. So what? Who cares?
Well, there's a lot of people believe there was pass interference on the last play of the Seattle-San Francisco game 2 weeks ago, too.
Exactly. And same thing. I mean, you know, why aren't those penalties called? I mean, obviously, like you say, it's a judgment thing. Things happen very fast out there. It could have been an honest mistake, but at the same time, if the NFL dictated that, if the NFL told its referees, which are its employees, how to do their job or perhaps not do their job, well, there's no law being broken. There's nothing to prevent that from altering the outcome of a game at the NFL's own wishes.
A lot of folks figured that instant replay would eliminate that, but they figured out rules that allow instant replay to be manipulated as well.
Oh, exactly. And I mean, people have seen that all over the place. And the NFL, where somebody's ruled out of bounds, you look at it on, you know, instant replay, so, you know, he's pretty clearly in bounds, and then the referee comes back out there, trots out and says, nope, you know, the instant replay didn't reverse the call, he was clearly out of bounds, and he's watching it at home and saying, what's that guy seeing? Well, that's the breaks, and there's nothing you can do as a fan. I mean, you have no recourse. You can't sue the league over a bad call. You can't do anything about it. You just have to suck it up and either stop watching it or recognize that the NFL is show business. It's entertainment. They've argued that fact in front of the Supreme Court. They are not sport. They're entertainment. And because of that, it allows them certain leeway to do certain things with their product, which is the game that you watch.
I always thought a dead giveaway that something was a little bit hinky was these makeup penalties that people will do. They make a really bad call. The refs will make a really bad call. Everyone knows they made a bad call. And then the next call, they'll make another one just to even things up for the team, at least temporarily.
And that happens in every sport. I mean, it's not just the NFL. It happens in the NBA. It happens in the NHL. I mean, there's strange officiating that occurs. And like you said, it doesn't necessarily follow what the rule book said things should be. And that's why I think a lot of people do have questions. I mean, I get a ton of email up to my website that people, you know, are happy, are thankful that I've been writing about this sort of, you know, subject matter because they have their own questions. And, you know, ESPN, Sports Illustrated, Yahoo, all these other places, they're not going to question this because they're too invested in the league. And in fact, ESPN basically funds the NFL. They fund the NBA. And to, you know, report negatively about this, to do research into game fixing and that sort of thing, which may affect the integrity of these games, they're not going to do it because that's just shooting themselves in the foot.
Yeah, that's their paycheck. Yeah, right. Talk to me about these FBI files. And in this context, how you got hooked on this topic, what it is that drove you to it or what caught your attention? Was it one particular game? And then also tell me in that context whether or not anybody has ever had the knock at the door. I would think with the amount of money that's involved, and if you're accurate and you're describing something that's true, that somebody would come and put a horse's head in your bed or something.
I'm hoping they'll come and offer me like $1 million to go away first.
Yeah.
That'd be a better offer than the horse's head. But no, so far they've ignored me, and everybody's ignored me. I mean, ESPN's ignored me, Sports Illustrated has ignored me. And those media outlets, those sports media outlets, actually went to my publisher, asked for a copy of Larceny Games, and then refused to do anything with it.
Oh.
Which, I mean, just kind of shows to me their complacency in this whole thing. But I got interested in this probably a good 10, 12 years ago by really two books. One's called They Call It a Game by Bernie Parrish, and the other one's called Interference, written by Dan Moldea.
Dan Moldea, sure. Yeah,
yeah, and they were both about the NFL. And Parrish, who used to be a player, wrote kind of how he thought when the television networks bought into the NFL that they literally bought the game. And Moldea came at it from a different angle and talked about game fixing and, you know, the bookies and the organized crime. And both of those really just sparked my attention because I never heard of either one of them. And again, they don't get a lot of publicity. And so that kind of just started me down this path. And after I wrote the fixes in, right when I was finishing it, I discovered that the FBI had these files and that no one had ever accessed them before. So once I learned how to work the Freedom of Information Act system, which I advise everybody to do, I mean, it's a really great source and it's really fun to do. And it's actually very inexpensive to do if you're interested in the topic to, you know, ask the FBI about it. And I got all these files. And again, no one else ever had accessed them. And there's over 400 of them and thousands upon thousands of pages, only some of which is covered in Larceny Games because it covered horse racing, boxing, the NFL, the NBA, Major League Baseball, college sports, and some other things on top of it as well.
Well, Dan Moldea, by the way, is a great investigative reporter. I've worked with him on mob stories. We cover a lot of mob stuff here in my younger days when the mafia was still very active in Las Vegas, and had worked with Dan, and he's a fearless reporter, does
well,
good stuff.
He was funny. I called him. I actually talked to him when I was writing this book, and he told me, don't write this.
Yeah.
He said, don't do this. Because he said the NFL destroyed his career.
Oh, absolutely.
They went out of their way when he wrote Interference to destroy him. And they did. They really buried him. And he wound up in a big lawsuit with the New York Times because the NFL had hired a beat reporter to write a negative review of his book intentionally, and the Times knowingly published it. And he went after them, and unfortunately he lost. But he said the NFL is going to destroy you. They're going to do the worst thing they can possibly do because they're going to try to protect that shield as much as they can.
Talk to me about the files, specifically regarding football. There's a chapter. I don't have your book, by the way. I'm sort of winging it here. You got to send me a copy of Larceny Games, Brian.
I most definitely will.
But there's a chapter in there that talks about the Detroit party bus, and I guess that's meaning the Detroit Lions. What is that file, and how does it reflect on whether games are fixed or not?
Well, the interesting thing is in 1964, Congress passed something called the Sports Bribery Act, and that made it a federal crime for someone to bribe a player, a coach, or an athlete to alter the outcome of a sporting event. The Detroit Party Bus, which you talk about, took place right before that happened. So the FBI actually never physically investigated that. But what it was members of the Detroit Lions were knowingly hanging out with members of the Detroit Mafia. And they were highly suspect that they were trading information, maybe fixing games for the Mafia. And at the same time, that's when Alex Karras admitted on national TV that as a player for the Detroit Lions, he'd bet on games in which he played, which opened up a whole investigation for the NFL and caused a major headache for the commissioner at the time, Pete Rozelle. And it wound up getting both Paul Hornung of the Green Bay Packers and Karras suspended for 1 year, who are basically the only two guys in NFL history to suffer such a fate. Four games.
I guess they're the only ones that ever did it, huh?
Well, and the thing is everybody says, oh, so what? They were gambling on themselves. Well, the same with Pete Rose, big deal. He gambled on, you know, his own team. But, you know, that's, everybody should do that, right? I mean, if they really believe they're going to win, well, problem is they didn't bet on every game they played in. So if they were betting with a bookie, which they were, it's a tip-off to the bookie when they're not betting on themselves this week. Well, what's the bookie going to think? Apparently they're not going to win. I'm going to bet the other side. So in a way, they were giving away free information despite the fact that they were, you know, betting on themselves supposedly.
Is there anything in the FBI file that says that Detroit really did throw a game, or just because I've seen those FBI files on various subjects, and like you, I'd recommend that people use the Freedom of Information Act while we still have one. Ask for your own FBI file, see what they've got on you. But
exactly.
Is there anything in there that says that they fixed a game, or is it speculation go that far, or not quite?
Well, again, with the Lions thing, the problem was is it wasn't the NFL's or the FBI's jurisdiction to investigate it because they hadn't broken the federal law. One of the best files I got about the NFL was a guy by the name of Harry Weismer, who had owned a part of the Lions at one time. He owned part of the Washington Redskins, and then he founded basically the New York Jets. It's the New York Titans in the NFL. And Weismer went into the NFL, into the FBI's office in New York in like 1962, sat down and said, I know my guys fixed last week's game. I know they threw it. And he said, I also know that many NFL games and AFL games have come under the influence of gamblers. And because this was before 1964, the FBI said, thanks. And they filed it. And that was the end of that.
I read some of the documents on your website about the NBA. In particular about the New York Knicks. This is back in the 80s, and these documents, I know there's a lot of specious stuff that can end up in the FBI files, but this was a lot of stuff talking about these players for the Knicks. They eliminated the names from the document before they released it, but at least three of these players that had bad cocaine problems and were palling around with a guy who was placing really big bets on Knicks games.
Yeah, the FBI believed that members of the Knicks were throwing the games as basically a favor to the cocaine dealer. And the funny part was, is the FBI knew that the cocaine dealer was a sports bettor, and he was betting maybe $300, $500 a game. And suddenly he started betting $10,000 a game and betting against the Knicks every time and won like 7 out of 8 straight bets. And so it got the FBI very interested. And the thing, and I'm sure you're familiar with, you know, reading these files, is they can be extremely frustrating because you don't have names. You can't determine who the FBI agent was to try to find this guy and talk to him about it. You can't tell necessarily who the players are. And the file seems to indicate that the FBI never went to the NBA with this information. They never went to the Knicks with this information. And they never even interviewed any of the players about what was going on. They talked to one source, which might have been the cocaine dealer. That source denied everything, and the FBI just dropped it. And that's the problem with the FBI is really about that same time, they dropped this entire subject matter. They stopped investigating for fixed games, and they're supposed to be the ones who are doing this job.
So did you go back and look at the lineup of the Knicks in 1982? Or do you think you know who those three players are?
Well,
have to say the names. We don't want to get sued.
There was one player, and I can say this. There's one player by the name of Michael Ray Richardson, and he was the first NBA player ever to be basically suspended for having a drug addiction, for having a drug problem. And he had a cocaine problem. Now, that doesn't mean he was one of these guys under suspicion. It doesn't mean he was one of these guys mentioned in the files. But it does kind of show a bit of correlation between the two events, that it's quite possible that this wasn't just some make-believe story, that some source was feeding the FBI, that this was actually legitimate thing, because the FBI did investigate it for a couple of years.
So the FBI could go after this.
They're supposed to. That's their job. But what happened was, is in the 60s when this whole thing started, they set up a network of sources and informants across the United States, and after about 20 years, it fell apart. And at the same time, right about the early 80s, Reagan tasked the FBI with fighting the war on drugs. So they really put this on the back burner and said, if something falls into our lap, we will go after it. And that's what you've seen happen somewhat recently with, like, the University of Toledo, University of San Diego, even the Tim Donaghy case in the NBA. All those investigations into game fixing and point shaving came out of other investigations. They weren't the primary focus. And that's a problem with the files I got from the FBI, which I talk about larceny games, is the fact that they had a special file designation for all of these things, but they dropped it in the 80s. So after really the 1980s, the FBI quit doing this, and yet they're the ones who are supposed to do this job.
Well, if you're looking at a conspiracy, I guess you'd have to put them as part of it if it really is true. If they could go after it and don't, I mean, it's something that affects millions of Americans and takes billions of dollars out of the public's pocket.
Exactly.
You mentioned in the book, too, larceny games about boxing. Now, this is not going to come as a surprise to anyone who knows anything about boxing, that the mob influenced fights, that fights were thrown. But the one that you zero in on, it's one that that I would have to say I know a lot about, because it's Ali and Liston, two fights that were probably a little bit strange. I was just a kid at the time, but I know a lot of the folks who are supposedly had a hand in fixing those fights had ties to Las Vegas. So tell me what the FBI files say about that.
Well, that was interesting that the FBI did investigate both of those fights. And the first one, people are suspect. I mean, the FBI never really came to a conclusion as to whether or not Liston threw it. Many people believe he did, because he was so mob-controlled. In fact, one of the things that I learned when writing this book was the fact that there is one mobster by the name of Frankie Carbo who literally ran boxing, and I mean ran it, from the late 1940s into the 60s. But with Liston, he was controlled by, like, the St. Louis mob, and he was later actually sold basically to Frankie Carbo. And that second fight that took place in Lewiston, Maine, between Ali and Liston, he Liston threw it. He took a dive. There's no doubt about it. I talked to a gambler who was really friendly with Liston, who admitted to it, and the FBI file seemed to pretty much indicate that it happened. But even more shocking, I think, is for fans of Muhammad Ali, the third time he won the heavyweight title, which was a fight against Leon Spinks, one of Spinks' members said to the FBI that this fight's being fixed, that Spinks is going to take a dive, and he basically laid out what was going to happen in the fight, and he said, if this is what happens, I'm going to come back to you, and we're going to go after this. Well, he was dead right. He was exactly right what happened in that fight, but then he refused to talk to the FBI, and without their informant, the FBI dropped the matter.
By the way, I should mention Frankie Carbo is a name that is well known to those of us who follow organized crime stories. A lot of people believe he was responsible for killing Bugsy Siegel, sort of the father of Las Vegas in some ways, the Las Vegas Strip anyway. Tell me this, what comes next for you? Do you have enough FBI files to do another book? And I would think one emphasis would be amateur sports. College sports might be easier to bribe those guys or intimidate them than professional athletes.
I think college sports is very, very dangerous in terms of fixing games. I think it happens a lot. The NCAA actually did a survey of like 19,000 student athletes and asked them about gambling and asked them about shaving points and fixing games, and a little less than 1% of football players and a little less than 1% of basketball players actually admitted in this anonymous survey to having participated in a fix.
Wow.
And that amounts to about 200 student athletes, which means perhaps as many as 200 games, and this is back in 2008, might have been fixed and no one knows about them. I mean, to fix a game like this, you know, when these kids aren't getting paid, you can just offer them a few $1,000s. And if they know they're not NBA or NFL bound, I think it'd be very easy to convince them to do this. So, yeah, I have numerous files about and kind of scandals that never appeared straight from the FBI that I probably will make into a book. I just hope it doesn't get, you know, repetitious, because it's kind of replacing, you know, the NFL or NBA team names with college team names. And it's kind of the same story, but the fact is, until somebody goes after this more than I, somebody's willing to admit that, you know, this could be a very serious problem in the United States, I got to keep at it.
Well, you've reached out to a pretty big audience tonight, Brian. I hope some people out there who might have information might be willing to contact you through the website here at Coast to Coast and provide you more information. I'm sure at some level there's got to be fixed games at the high school games, maybe where football is really big. Texas, say, nothing against Texans, but it's like a religion there. Brian Toohey, author of Larceny Games. It's been great having you on the show.
Thanks for having me on, George. I really appreciate it.
Thanks. Send me a copy.
I definitely will.
All right, stick around, everyone. Dr. Marie Jones and Dr. Larry Flaxman coming up to talk about viral mythology, how the truth of the ancients was encoded and passed down to all of us. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM.